My talk will be based on joint work with Ashwin Vishwanath and also some follow-up work here. As I already said, the initial motivation for this work was Son's paper, and there was some parallel work by almost a dual of our paper with Ashwin was a paper by Sentil and Chong Wang, subsequently, there have been a number of other papers on this topic that I might mention towards the end. Okay, so in the last year, we have realized that there are some kind of unexpected connections between three seemingly different problems. One of these problems is the problem of correlated surface states of 3+1 dimensional topological insulators, and that's an area that has been quite active for the past few years. Another problem is a problem of certain spin liquids in 3+1 dimensions, in particular time reversal spin invariant spin liquids, and ones which are described by Maxwell theory, by U1 gauge theory. And the third problem is one we already heard about from Son this morning, and that's the problem of the quantum Hall fluid at filling factor 1/2. Okay, so let me try to explain the connections between these problems and the results. So first result, which I think is very solid, is a duality between certain 3+1 dimensional spin liquids, ones which are described by Maxwell theory, U1 gauge theory. And these two spin liquids, you can think of one of them is as a topological insulator where the particle number symmetry has been gauged. And the other spin liquid, you can think of as taking a rather unusual topological insulator, one in so-called class A3, and I'll explain what that is, engaging the U1 symmetry again. So that's the first duality. That's a duality between U1 gauge theories, and it lives in 3+1 dimensions. And then there is a kind of a descendant surface duality that lives at the surface of a topological insulator. So just take a topological insulator, non-interacting. There is a single Dirac cone on the surface. Okay, so here is the action. And for future convenience, I've added an external background gauge field, capital A, to this action. And the claim is that there is an alternative description of the TI surface, which is given by QED3 with a single flavor of gapless Dirac cones, as shown here. So you should note that I have the word duality in quotation marks here, and I'll explain exactly the status of the relation between these two theories in a few slides. But first, let me give the dictionary for kind of translating operators in this theory to operators in QED3. So we already saw part of this dictionary in Son's talk. So first we have, in this free theory, we have the electric current of electrons. And in the dual theory, this is represented by the flux of this gauge field little a. So this gauge field little a is a dynamical gauge field that lives in 2+1 dimensions. Its flux is the electron density. In particular, flux 4 pi of little a is charge, physical electric charge 1. Okay, so then you can ask, what does the physical electron correspond to in QED3? And turns out that it corresponds to an instanton of little a with flux 4 pi. And you can also ask, what is the physical interpretation of this charged fermion of QED3, this, which I denoted by psi d, d stands for dual. And turns out that the physical interpretation is that this dual fermion, which is not a local object, is actually a double vortex of the electronic fluid. So kind of for normalization, this flux 4 pi vortex.
So you
can think in various ways. One way is indeed, you know, go to the superfluid phase here, and then in that superfluid phase there is a flux 4 pi vortex or vorticity, yeah, vorticity 2hc over e. And that's the same as psi dual. You can also just think about putting in a background. Like if you're in a sphere, you can imagine that you just add flux, background flux 4 pi of this external gauge field A, and that's the same as the dual fermion. Okay, so one issue that's going to be important for this talk is how.
If there's no background, it's no gauge field. So then you have a force that is the total number of the dual fermion has to be exactly zero to be quite convex.
That's right, but that's always a property of QED3 that in the absence of this term, the on any compact manifold, the net charge should be zero. Okay, so one issue that will be central to my talk is the role of time reversal symmetry. So, if you take a topological insulator, on the surface we have this a single Dirac cone and of electrons, and the electron, as we know, transforms as a Cramer's doublet under time reversal like this. And you can ask, how does the time reversal symmetry act in the dual theory? And turns out that acts in this way. It transforms the dual fermion to its antiparticles. Notice this dagger here, which is consistent with the physical interpretation of the dual fermion as the vortex, right? Because the vortex goes to an antivortex under time reversal symmetry. Okay, now this Dirac, free Dirac theory has another symmetry, which is again time reversal like. It's an anti-unitary symmetry again, which I call particle hole symmetry, where now you let the electron go to its antiparticle, and this is the symmetry that Son already brought up, and it's it will be useful when we go to the quantum hole problem. But this is charge conjugation times time reversal, so CT. So it's anti-unitary. That's important. And then in the dual, in the dual theory in QED3, then the dual fermion now transforms into itself. So it's one symmetry is mapped by the duality to the other symmetry. T gets mapped to particle hole. So let me just remind you that what I just told you sounds very much like the famous particle vortex duality of bosons, where we know that you start with the XY model describing an insulator superfluid transition, and this is dual to the abelian Higgs model for this scalar complex scalar boson V coupled to a dynamical U1 gauge field little a, and the correspondence is exactly the same, except instead of fluxes 4 pi, you have fluxes 2 pi. And you should think of this dual variable V as the vortex of this of the physical boson in the XY model. Okay, so in the case of this bosonic duality, it is believed that this duality holds at a dynamical level as a duality between IR fixed points of this theory and this theory. You have to be in the right range of parameters with U tilde. There is also a Maxwell term for little a that I didn't write here. You have to be in the right range. But based on numerical simulations, I think people believe that if you are in that regime, there is a dynamical duality between these two theories, and there are fixed points. That is when m squared is equal to, and m tilde squared is morally equal to zero. Okay, so we don't have the same, currently, I think we do not have the same statement about these two theories. So we do not know whether this theory we know everything about, it's a free theory. This theory is some strongly coupled QED3 with a single flavor is a strongly coupled field theory. What we would like to know is, you know, what happens at its IR fixed point. That is, you know, there is this dimension full coupling G squared here. And we would like to go to energies below this dimensionful scale and ask what happens. And you know, it is possible that actually at the IR fixed point, these two theories are the same. But we don't, you know, we cannot prove that at the moment. What we do know, what we can prove, and I'll kind of sketch the proof in my talk, is that these two theories have the same anomaly under the global particle number symmetry and time reversal symmetry. That is, this dual theory, this QED3, can live on the surface of a topological insulator. It might not describe the free surface, but it describes some surface. And that's already useful, as you'll see, for several things. So one thing that it's useful for is, you know, by starting with this dual theory and then pair condensing the dual fermions, you can deduce a symmetric gapped topologically ordered surface state of the TI called the T-Fafen. And you know, Son already mentioned this state. So this state was conjectured before to be a surface state of a topological insulator. I will not go into it, you know, its exact particle content, but you know, this gives kind of an explicit derivation of that state. Actually, that state comes in two flavors, so-called T-Fafen plus and T-Fafen minus, and previously it wasn't known which flavor is realized on the TI surface, but now it's settled, it's plus there.
So this Chan-Hu Peaks condensation, I wonder whether there's some notion like a BCS, like a strong pairing, like there's two limits. Whether here is only one limit, the same concern about the usually we'll start with some kind of Arminian states with a fermion, we have a Higgs space, people say, oh, you just have some Arminian statistics. But in the BCS limit, then you may have a non-Arminian statistics. Whether here, how not.
Yeah, I think this is because this is a Fouquet, so this is, you know, this is a Dirac cone, and this is like a Fouquet superconductor. So I think as a result, it's always kind of weak pairing. Okay, so that's one thing that this dual theory is useful for. Another thing it's useful for, it allows us to deduce Son's theory of the half-field Landau level. And so the way you do that is, you know, you start with a free Dirac cone on the TI surface, and you apply a magnetic field. Okay, you get these Landau levels, but these are now relativistic Landau levels. And as remember, I said that this free Dirac cone has a particle hole symmetry and anti-unitary symmetry. And if that particle hole symmetry is preserved, that is, if the chemical potential for this Dirac cone is at zero, then when you apply a magnetic field, then you will end up with all the negative Landau levels filled and the zeroth Landau level half filled. So that's you know, that's the problem of the so at low energies you just recover a single half-filled Landau level, which is exactly the same as in the non-relativistic problem. Okay, but then in the dual treatment, this single half-filled Landau level, in the dual problem, you know, this external magnetic field B enters here, And all it does, it simply shifts the chemical potential of the dual fermions from the Dirac point to some levels, so that the filling of this Dirac cone is now given by the number of the essentially by the external magnetic field, as Son explained earlier. So this essentially gives you a way to derive or access Son's theory. Okay, another issue is that remember I already told you that this particle hole symmetry of the initial Dirac cone in the magnetic field, you know, if you look at how this particle hole symmetry acts in the zeroth Landau level, in the half field Landau level, you know, it acts exactly in the same way as it does if you, you know, just for a non-relativistic two-dag, if you forget about all these Landau levels. As I already told you, in the dual theory, you know, what used to be particle hole in direct theory becomes ordinary time reversal in the dual theory. So the dual fermion just transforms as a Cramer's doublet under time reversal. There's this dual fermion now is like a surface of a TI under time reversal. Okay, so that's a short summary of the results. So here is the plan for the rest of the talk. I'll start with the bulk duality between gauge theories that I mentioned earlier, and I'll use this bulk duality to kind of bootstrap the surface duality. At the end of the talk, if I have time, I'll mention the recent numerical evidence by my brilliant numerical collaborators that the composite, you know, that Son's theory is actually right, and that the composite fermion is a Dirac fermion. Okay, so let me start with this bulk duality. So as I said, it's a duality between two U1 gauge theories, or which describe two time reversal invariant spin liquid states in 3+1 dimensions. So let me tell you exactly what these spin liquid states are. I'm going to access these spin liquid states using just conventional parton construction. So these are going to be spin liquids just of bosons. So no physical electrons. Just imagine spins. Okay, so we have spins sitting on a lattice, and as usual, you know, in the parton construction, I break up these spins into some fractional degrees of freedom. In this case, fermions psi, as a result, there is a local. In this rewriting, there is a local U1 redundancy. So this gives rise to a U1 gauge symmetry and an emergent gauge field little a. But I'd like to describe spin liquids which are a time reversal invariant. So I have to tell how the partons transform under time reversal. This is like the projective symmetry group of the partons. So one choice is to say that let the partons transform as Cramer's doublets, as ordinary electrons do under time reversal. So let's entertain this possibility. And then with this possibility, next I have to choose some, in this parton construction, standard thing is to use some, place the partons into some band structure. So what I can do here, I can put the partons into the band structure of a topological insulator. Okay, so then in the bulk of my 3D state, the partons are gapped, and then there is, there is going to be a gapless U1 gauge field, little a, living in the bulk. And on the surface, just like TI surface, there will be a single Dirac cone of this partons psi, and this single Dirac cone will interact with the gapless photon living in the bulk. Okay. Yeah, at this level, I don't have a particular.
You need to assume though that the U1 gauge group is decomposed.
Correct. But I think it's clear that this phase exists. It's realized by some Hamiltonian, and I'm I'm going to leave it as a homework exercise to figure out which one. So, yeah. Okay. So here is the second spin liquid. Again, we are going to use a parton construction to access it. Again, the partons are going to be fermions. Again, there is going to be a U1 gauge symmetry. There will be an emerging gauge field A tilde. The property that will be different is how the partons transform under time reversal. So here in the second spin liquid, I'm going to let partons go to their antiparticles under time reversal. That is, the gauge charge of the partons will be reversed by time reversal. So this is this should be contrasted to the first spin liquid where the gauge charge of the partons was preserved by time reversal. And if you just ask, if you have fermions transforming in this way under time reversal and under U1 symmetry, what kind of non-interacting symmetry class is that? And that's known as the class A3. And you typically think of it as superconductors with time reversal and spin Z conservation. So you know in the physical class A3, you think of this U1 group as spin Z conservation. And in contrast, the standard transformations of fermions under time reversal, that's like our beloved ordinary TIs, which are in class A2. So let me remind you, this class A3 is a little esoteric, but let me remind you about the non-interacting classification in class A3. One just takes Shinsei's paper and looks it up in the table in the tenfold way, and it turns out that in 3+1 dimensions, the non-interacting classification in this class is integers, which should be compared to Z2 classification for ordinary topological insulators. And if you start with a class nu out of these integers, then on the surface you have nu Dirac cones. So for my second spin liquid, I have to choose some band structure for these partons, and I'm going to place them into the band structure, which is the nu equal 1 band structure of class A3. Non-trivial band structure. So really, this is for the purposes of this talk, you can just think of this, the partons of the second spin liquid. We have some U1 symmetry, and it interplays in some way with time reversal. And that's the definition. You shouldn't really think about where these partons come from, because in any way they are kind of slave particles. So.
So both the spin liquid have time reversal
emission. Right.
So the key is that whether they are the same or different.
Exactly. Okay, so in this second spin liquid, we are going to choose a band structure for the partons, which is the nu equal 1 band structure of class A3. So there is a single Dirac cone of gapless Dirac cone of partons living on the surface. In the bulk, the partons are gapped. Again, there is a deconfined gauge field, little a, in the bulk, which interacts with the partons on the surface. Okay, so now, as Shaogang just mentioned, we have these two spin liquids, and if you forget about the time reversal symmetry, basically these are the same spin liquid. But if you insist on time reversal symmetry, it looks like they are different spin liquids because in one spin liquid the electric charges go into themselves under time reversal. In the other spin liquid, the electric charges are reversed by time reversal. Turns out that in fact these are, despite that, these are the same spin liquid as a time reversal invariant phase of matter. But the relationship between them is rather non-trivial. So these two states, actually, these two U1 gauge theories are related by electric magnetic duality. and the charge of the first spin liquid gets mapped to a double monopole of the second spin liquid. Okay, so how?
Maybe the same phase, because, for example, can I do something like Aprecht or Anderson combine side dagger and side spin dagger together to form everything SU2 cross SU2 symmetry? So it's another SU2 symmetry which my first kind of part turned into the second kind of spinons. And then I could imagine the different surfaces just to pick up different mediums which are rotating by.
So you want some kind of mother state of
yeah,
this?
Higher symmetry than that.
Yeah, that would be interesting. But I don't think this that doesn't sound right because you know the dual is the monopole. So is a
exactly.
Yeah.
Unless you make this monopole local in some other by using another duality theory.
I mean, yeah. Why aren't they just different two different phases?
Sorry?
I mean, duality relates usually strong coupling with weak coupling.
So.
I could imagine that one is a weak coupled phase, and there is some kind of strong.
That's correct. In fact, the coupling. So these are described by Maxwell theory, mm-hmm. and you know Maxwell theory. So in fact, it's a Maxwell theory with a theta term, mm-hmm. With theta equal to pi, and. Under the duality, the electric charge transforms in this way. But since you have, you know, since this electric charge is really a parameter in the phase, you know, the strong coupling and the weak coupling are part of the same phase.
Then you really have a to see.
So if you insist,
the theta term and the periodicity of the theta term.
So. If you want to think about this. In the conventional, so conventionally you have the SL2Z symmetry or dual set of dualities, and usually the ordinary electric magnetic duality sends tau to minus one over tau, where tau is like theta over 2 pi plus 2 pi I over e squared. So this, when theta is equal to pi, this s changes theta to something, you know, something ridiculous. So the operation that actually preserves theta equal pi is what I call SF. And this is something like S inverse T squared S, where T is tau to tau plus 1. There might be minus 2 here.
But for the same reason, these actually are not the same theory, and they just simply do different phases.
So
with the phase transition between them.
So the statement is the following: that these are two different descriptions of the same phase. They are related. The two descriptions are related by this duality. And
so maybe if I use like a mean P for one set of partons, and you take another parton and use construct state by mean P, they may be the different state.
Well, as members of the phase, they belong to the same phase.
But if I use a mean P for one set of partons, since the coupling is reversed, it is unlikely that I can just another mean for the difference of the partons.
Well, if you tune, you know, if you play with the theory, somehow you should be able to drive it into the strong coupling phase. In the mean field, the coupling is, you know, infinite to start with, anyway, typically. So. that's not too important again. You can just choose. As you see, I've been very vague about what these matrices gamma are. You can choose them. Probably you can choose them so that the initial spins transform in the same way. But anyway, I'm really thinking. I'm not thinking about like a particular lattice model of spins. I'm really thinking about this kind of stable equivalence between phases, where you're allowed to add any number of kind of boring product.
So you think that there is actually a divided continuity in these two states?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what is, you know, why am I so confident? So first, so what is the evidence for this this duality? Well, so let's start with the first spin liquid. As I said, in the bulk is described by Maxwell theory that we obtained by integrating out these gap partons. So we'll have a Maxwell term in the action for the gauge field, and then we'll have a topological term coming from the integrating out the partons, and this topological term has theta equal to pi. So if I think about the topologically non-trivial excitations of this U1 gauge theory, there are electric charges and magnetic monopoles. And you know that in the presence of a theta angle, a magnetic monopole sucks up some electric charge, that's known as the Witten effect, which is proportional to the to the theta angle and the magnetic charge. So at theta equal pi, in particular, single monopoles have half odd integer charge. Okay. And if you look at the second spin liquid, again, the story is very similar. You know, you integrate out the gapped partons. Again, you generate a theta term with theta equal pi. So again, you have the same same Witten effect and the same kind of electric and magnetic charges of the monopoles. So if you look at the lattice of Dion excitations, you know, all excitations with arbitrary electric and magnetic charges, in the two theories, they're the same lattice. The way the two theories are different is that the time reversal symmetry acts on these lattices in different ways in the two theories. In the first theory, remember, the electric charge is preserved by T, but the magnetic charge is reversed. So this this symmetry is reflection around the y-axis. In the second theory, the electric charge is reversed, the magnetic charge is preserved. So this is a reflection about the x-axis. Now, you can choose the following basis for the two for the lattice in the first theory, like this, where this is some basis for the lattice given by monopoles with charge one and with flux one and flux minus one and electric charge 1/2, and you can choose another basis for the same lattice like this. And my statement is that in fact, there is a duality, this duality, which maps this lattice basis into this lattice basis. And you can check that, first of all, this duality preserves the long-range Coulomb interaction between the dions. It preserves the dion self-statistics, and it preserves the long-range statistical interaction between the dions. And furthermore, it preserves the action of time reversal symmetry. All of those things are preserved, provided that you suitably modify the coupling constants in the two theories in this manner, so that they're related in this manner. So that's the evidence for the duality. You know, if all the topological excitations are the same, then well. Okay, and in particular, under this duality, the sum of these two lattice vectors, which is a single electric charge in this theory, gets mapped to a sum of these lattice vectors, which is a double monopole. Okay, so that's the bulk duality. Now let me use this bulk duality to deduce the surface duality. Okay, so we have these two bulk phases, and now let me also think about the surfaces. So remember, we had this single Dirac cones on the surface. For now, there have been no electrons. Everything has been just spins. So now I'm going to introduce electrons into the problem. So I'm just going to introduce an electron psi e. And imagine that on top of this state, I just add a trivial band insulator of these electrons. OK. And then I'm going to do something. So let me remember this as bulk phases. These are just two descriptions of the same bulk phase. So let me use first the description one. In the description one, I'm going to imagine taking a bound state of the electron and the spinon, the parton in the bulk, and condensing this bound state. So this is like kind of like a Kondo effect. Once this object is condensed, it carries an internal U1 charge, so the bulk gauge field delay gets Higgs as a result of the condensation. Furthermore, once this is condensed, the electron is really the same object as the parton, so the single Dirac cone of partons is now the same as a single Dirac cone of electrons. So as a result, you get some state which is topologically trivial, which doesn't have any, which is gapped in the bulk, which doesn't have any bulk topological order, and that has a single Dirac cone of electrons on the surface. Well, that's just the ordinary topological insulator. But now let's look at this same process in the dual description. Now, in the dual description, remember, single parton in the bulk corresponded to a double monopole in the bulk. So condensing this bound state in the dual description is the same as condensing a bound state of electron and a double monopole. So now, instead of a Higgs transition in the bulk, in the dual description, this is a confinement transition. So in the bulk, the dual gauge field gets confined, gets gapped, and the partons in the bulk get confined. Okay, so the bulk is again trivial, that's good. The gauge field on the surface doesn't have to get confined in this process. So the gauge field on the surface can survive. And
two more phases are actually the same phase.
These are just two descriptions of the same phase.
Because you confine your condensing charge, fundamental charge problem, so there is no difference between Higgs and confinement.
That's correct.
But the surface appears to be different.
The surface appears to be different, but in fact, when I start here,
yes,
it's not clear that these are actually the same surface. So the bulk phase is the same, but this might be two different surfaces of the same bulk phase. And therefore, in my final picture here, after the transitions in the bulk, this might be two different surfaces of the same bulk phase. But at least they are surfaces of the same bulk phase. That's already non-trivial. So after the confinement in the bulk here, the gauge field can, is gone in the bulk but can survive on the surface. And then the surface theory is just QED3. We conclude that QED3 can be realized on the surface of a topological insulator. That is, these two theories have the same anomalies under the global symmetries. As Son already mentioned, this is a derivation of the duality, but it's a very indirect derivation. There has been very recently, just I believe last week, a more direct derivation that works directly in 2D that doesn't invoke the bulk. And there you really can map these two theories at an operator level on a kind of quasi 1D lattice. But there is a caveat that the dual theory in this derivation comes out to be strongly coupled. The coupling constant is of order of the UV cutoff. In fact, it's kind of anisotropic, and one of the coupling constants is infinite. So then, some lattice realization of this QED3 with strong coupling is in fact just exactly the same as the free fermion. But what we usually call QED3 is a theory where this coupling constant is much smaller than the UV cutoff. That's how the field theory is defined. And then, in the UV, it's the same as a free photon coupled to a free Dirac cone, and then you want to know what happens in the IR. And in that setup, we don't know. It might be that as you decrease the coupling constant and kind of take the continuum limit, essentially, there is no phase transition, and the duality between the IR fixed point of this and free theory holds. Or it might be that there is a phase transition. Okay, there is another caveat related to this derivation, but unfortunately, I don't have time to go into that. So I was going, I was initially going to revisit this bulk duality now. So remember, I argued the bulk duality based on the spectrum of Dion excitations, but you know, maybe that spectrum of Dion excitations is not sufficient to argue that the two phases are really the same. And in fact, it's not sufficient. But there is a better thing that you can do, which is compute the partition functions of the two theories on an arbitrary space-time manifold, more precisely, if you want to care about time reversal symmetry, you have to care about a non-orientable manifold, as Shinsei taught us on Wednesday. So then on non-orientable manifolds, really the duality between these two theories becomes a rather non-trivial, statement, while I have not been able to prove it on arbitrary manifold, actually it holds on all orientable manifolds and on the important non-orientable manifold RP4, so you can read about that in this paper. Okay, so in the last maybe 2 minutes, let me tell you. Let me tell you about this numerical work, and this is really all work of Scott, Mike, and Roger. So what we would like to Song has proposed this beautiful beautiful resolution of the problem with particle hole symmetry in the half-field Landau level. And the resolution is that the composite fermion is a Dirac fermion. So the question is whether we can test that. To test that, we do a DMRG study of a quantum Hall fluid on cylinders. So we work in the lowest Landau level at half filling. We use this potential, which is basically just the Coulomb potential. We can take the cylinder circumference to be up to 24 magnetic lengths. Okay, so remember, in Son's theory, we have this single Dirac cone filled to a density set by external magnetic field. So essentially, the radius of the Fermi surface is just the inverse magnetic length. So you can ask, so that's what happens, you know, on infinite plane. But if you study the theory on a cylinder, then the momentum in the y direction becomes quantized. Instead of having a Fermi surface, you get several cuts through the Fermi surface. So you have kind of a set of Fermi points. Okay. In fact, when you go up to circumference up to 24 magnetic lengths, we see up to 8 cuts through the Fermi surface. Now, if you think about the physical electron density at some wave vector q, generally large wave vector q, you expect that you know this operator has some overlap in the effective theory with the density of the dual fermions of the composite fermions at wave vector q. So then, if you look at the structure factor, at the density correlation function of electrons, you expect that to have singularities at momenta connecting, these Fermi points. These Fermi points, and in fact, you do. So you see, this is the structure factor at various momental along the y direction. And you see you have a bunch of sharp singularities. And from these singularities, you can essentially read off the locations of the Fermi points on the Fermi surface.
This DMRG with open boundary.
This so-called infinite DMRG. So along the x direction, it's infinite. And along y direction, it's a cylinder.
So there's no conventional DMRG which has a boundary.
No. OK. And so you can also go to larger systems, larger circumferences. So this is 24 magnetic length circumference, and you see actually, you know, here this is the density correlation function. You see a very nice set of singularities on a circle that corresponds exactly to the Fermi surface of radius one. Okay, so here is another picture of the same thing. Another thing you can do is you can get the central charge of the state from the entanglement entropy, and what we see is, you know, as we correlate the density structure factor, getting, you know, reading off the Fermi surface from the density structure factor, we can correlate that with the central charge measured, and we see that every time an extra pair of crossings and an extra pair of Fermi points enters the Fermi surface, as you increase the circumference, the central charge jumps by one. Now that's very nice. That's what you expect. And in fact, the total central charge is number of cuts through the Fermi surface minus one. And this minus one corresponds to the fact that the overall charge mode of this composite fermion gets killed by the fluctuations of the gauge field in the quasi 1D limit. So in fact, you've already seen the effect of the fact that you have a gauge field. Okay, so then another thing we study is the particle hole symmetry, and to very very high, basically to our numerical precision, we see that the state we get is particle hole symmetric. Okay, so the last, you know, all of this is just probing the Fermi surface. So it doesn't distinguish the HLR theory and Sohn's proposal of a Dirac fermion. So how do we see that it's a Dirac fermion? So Sohn already talked about the fact that the composite fermion, this Dirac fermion composite fermion, is a Cramer's doublet. And we know that there is a classic signature on the TI surface of the Dirac fermion, is that there is no 2KF backscattering. Well, here there is no 2KF backscattering of time reversal symmetric disorder. Here, remember, the role of time reversal is played by particle hole symmetry. So here there is no 2KF backscattering of particle hole symmetric disorder. So what you should do is you should basically study correlation functions of particle hole symmetric operators like this one, and you will see that these correlation functions have no singularity at 2KF. Okay, so here is a picture, rather detailed picture. So this here we take this particle hole symmetric operator, this one, we study its correlation function as a function of momentum, and we see a bunch, so this is the black curve here, and we see a bunch of peaks corresponding to, you know, to the various transitions on the Fermi surface, and we see all the peaks we expect except a single peak. We expect a peak here and we don't see it. You see that the black curve here is smooth. You can also see a close up here. And that peak corresponds precisely to 2KF backscattering. So this is the case. So far, this is the case mu equal infinity, so the black curve. And then, so this is the evidence. In the case where you have just a single Landau level, particle hole symmetric, we don't see any 2KF backscattering. And then we break particle hole symmetry by hand by introducing another layer, like a double well, and the tunneling between the two layers, and mu is the chemical potential offset between the two layers. And then so this breaks particle hole symmetry, and you see that essentially mu parameterizes the strength, 1 over mu parameterizes the strength of particle hole symmetry breaking. So as you increase the strength of particle hole symmetry breaking, you see that a singularity at 2KF comes back. So I think that's basically a smoking gun signature. Sorry? Deep? Why deep?
You have a complete destructive
interface. No, what do you expect to see? Something smooth. So there is there can always be a smooth background, right? So it's not, you're not really studying. It's not like you're studying resistivity, and seeing, you know, the resistivity, like the absence of localization or something. What you're studying really here is the correlation function of this particle hole symmetric operator at some wave vector q, and you know, this operator of q, you expect to couple, you know, for generic q, you expect to couple to all sorts of processes on the Fermi surface and off Fermi surface. But what particle hole symmetry does for you is it says that the coupling to, so let this be k and this be minus k, and say 2k is exactly q. What particle hole symmetry does for you is it says that the coupling to psi dagger, in fact, I have this in my previous slide. What it does for you is it tells you that the coupling to this operator, which, you know, which scatters the composite fermion across the Fermi surface, is exactly zero. So therefore, you don't expect so if you had such a coupling, you would have a singularity at 2kF. Now you just have no singularity, but there is still background coming from, you know, things which are off shell. So you don't in fact you do expect a weak singularity coming from higher order operators, but we actually don't see it. Okay, thank you very much. Sorry for.
Thank you.